Hello again, everyone. It's that time again. It is the 19th day of February 2019. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Daily Caller podcast for Tuesday. It's Tuesday already. We're expecting a bunch of snow starting tonight and tomorrow, so expect your government to be shut down tomorrow. If you want to email the program, email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. And if I remember at the end of the program, I'll ask for your input on something for my miserable television-watching existence. I'm looking for a new trashy series. Maybe a reality show. I don't know. Everything I watch is on hiatus or being canceled. So I'll make the plea at the end of the program. Also, thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Please keep doing that. Spread the word on social media and all that good stuff. We only grow because of you. And by we, I mean this show. I mean me and the cat sitting next to me tonight is Veruca. They're all collarless. They've lost their collars. I see one of them on the floor over there. They run around and fight and play with each other and knock them off. Anyway, lots of stuff to get to on the program. Day three, technically, of the cold continues. If you can hear it in my voice, the sore throat, the stuffiness. The whole upstairs of the house is full of Vicks VapoRub smell as we try to get two kids who are stuffed up to sleep. And it seems to be working. Every time I come across one of these, I'm like Mel Gibson in the movie Conspiracy Theory. When he sees a copy of Catcher in the Rye, he has to buy it. Now when I see a Vicks vaporizer, I have to buy it to try and get the whole house to smell. It's not working. I don't have one in the basement yet. I haven't had that many of them. But tomorrow we're going to Target to buy like two or three of them because they're only like $14 a piece. And breathing is a good thing. Anyway, for that reason, I'm going to probably rely heavily on some audio today because I promised you guys an hour show. I'm going to do my damnedest to get there. But I'm going to do it with the help of audio. I'm going to cheat. It's a cheat in the business. Anyway, there's a lot of stuff I want to get to. Tons of ridiculousness, including perhaps the most obnoxious bride in the world. We'll end the program on that, if I don't, that and my plea for TV. Just unbelievable. I don't know what the hell's wrong with people, except we've got an entitlement society that tells everybody that every choice they have is valid and everything they want should be theirs at their fingertips. No, it shouldn't. No, it shouldn't. Just shut up and leave people alone, even if it's your own damn wedding. Anyway, I want to start off with the latest in the hoax business, the Jussie Smollett. I can't get used to saying Jussie. I would have played a theme song for this, but I couldn't think of an appropriate theme song. I thought maybe Jussie's Girl, and you could just hear it as Jussie's Girl, but that doesn't apply here. So we're just going to have to go in cannonballing without a theme song. And kind of seems like the way that he's bothered to try and piece this mess together. Reports keep coming out of Chicago. The Chicago police would like to speak to Jussie Smollett and maybe have another round with him, but his lawyers are sort of advising against that, which is interesting for the victim of a crime to refuse to cooperate with the authorities. Maybe Jussie is busy out on the golf course with O.J. Simpson, hunting not only for the real killers, but also hunting for his real attackers. Yeah, you've undoubtedly heard this by now. I talked about it yesterday on the show. The attack heard around the world, the MAGA hat attack. Or they weren't wearing MAGA hats. They just said, this is MAGA country, man. Well, it's a big pile of steaming garbage. The attack, which was billed as, well, an attack, first of all, was billed as two white guys attacking a sweet, sweet, nourishing gay black man. And oh boy, did that just feed right into the leftist narrative. They live in this world of intersectionality. I've talked about it before. They have this ever-changing flow chart of victim status. that the left uses and judges everything by, to be perfectly honest with you. If they find out a crime has occurred, they bust out their handy-dandy little flowchart, and they say, okay, what is the race, or the sexual orientation, the sexual gender identity, religion of the victim, first and foremost? It has to be the victim. If it's just a white guy of no discernible religion, or worse yet, Christian, they're not interested. They don't care who the perp is. Doesn't matter. Moving on. But if it's something other than a white guy, then it piques their interest. But it, of course, has to be measured against the other stories of the day, so their handy-dandy flowchart comes out. If it's just a black man who's the victim of a crime, well, that's every day in Chicago or Baltimore. That probably won't rate unless it's a particularly slow news day. But a gay black man, well, that's two of their favorite things, melded into one, two of the preferred victim classes. Then suddenly their curiosity is piqued. They're going to read a little deeper. Then they find out that it's a celebrity. Now, it's a celebrity with air quotes around it. It's a guy who's most people have never heard of, as popular as Empire is on television. It is still not watched by that many people in a nation of 330 million people, but still they can attach the trifecta. Once you reach trifecta status, any sort of three pillars of the liberal intersectionality tripod, they're in. They are in. And that's what we saw in the Smollett case. It was immediately reported as gospel. My God, can you believe? Can you believe what happened to this gay black celebrity? And then they said, well, what actually did happen? And the story was that he was minding his own business, getting a Subway sandwich at 2 a.m., as people do all the time. And, you know, if you've ever been to Chicago, there are 6 trillion restaurants in Chicago. Every single one of them is better than Subway Sandwich. Most of them will deliver, especially now with all the delivery services. There are so many better options than Subway. So I would have been a little suspicious about that to begin with. But the story was that two white guys attacked this gay black celebrity who somehow knew his television show. He's not like the superstar of the TV show. There's two really talented actors who are the face of Empire. I honestly never heard of this guy until this so-called attack. But Terrence Howard and Taraji P. Henson, far superior actors. And if Jussie Smollett had focused his energy and burnt as many calories on trying to be a better actor, he probably would have gotten much. Imagine, because he spent a lot of time and effort on concocting this scam. He probably could have, you know, done anything, but he didn't. He thought, well, what's the way to get a shortcut? Oh, yes, of course. Liberal America loves victims. They feel sorry for them. They shower them with praise. They want to know more about them. They will go and he's got a record coming out apparently next month. Not really sure how well that's going to go, but hell, R. Kelly sold more records after he got after a videotape of him having sex with a teenager showed up, and he was charged with child rape or whatever he was charged with. So, you know, we're so screwed up as a society, who the hell knows? But Jussie didn't want to have to really do all the work to get the attention, and who knows, maybe there were problems on the set. We'll probably never know what really motivated him, but I guarantee you this. He's going to give an interview at some point to somebody, maybe Oprah. It is Chicago. She's got roots there. And he will blame society. He'll do what every liberal does. It's, you know, this is a bigger problem. I realize what I did was wrong, but we as a society have to get together and really stop these sorts of things. He's going to find a way to blame everybody, including himself. His PR team will tell him, you know, you concocted this. You're going to have to sort of bite the bullet on this one, throw yourself on the mercy of the court. And if you go on television and you say you didn't do anything, it's society's fault, you're probably going to do some time. he does deserve to do some time. But anyway, this all started long before he'd, according to news reports now, because this is developing on a daily basis, sometimes an hourly basis. The report was about 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, Smollett got a letter in the mail. One of those cheesy, old-timey movie ransom kind of notes where the letters are cut out of newspapers and magazines and pasted on a piece of paper. It said, and this is a direct quote, I'm just reading what this letter said. You will die, black fag. It's the entirety of the text. And then there is a drawing of what kind of looks like a penis. I'm not really sure. There's a gun. There's somebody else. They're all stick figures. We're not really dealing with even conceptual artists here. I'm pretty sure my daughter could draw better than this. And then there's a small stick figure that has allegedly a rope around its neck. So it'd be a little disconcerting. And there was white powder in the envelope as well. So immediately the authorities were called to find out what the white substance in the envelope was. And it turned out it was mashed up aspirin. That in and of itself could have happened. It could happen to anybody. When I worked in the United States Senate, it was right after the anthrax attacks. They were fresh in everybody's mind. Everybody knew them. By the way, all the mail to government buildings, to government agencies, actual physical mail, is now put through an irradiation machine that will kill anything that's put in there. But I just remember sitting at my desk in the Senate, and there's a full chemical warfare suit essentially sitting on my desk, and a hazmat helmet. There's everything. We did drills every once in a while. We had to be prepared for anything that ever happened. Nothing ever did, thank God. And it'd be really hard because the mail, when it's put through the irradiation machine, it kills everything and it fuses the paper together. It's very weird. Becomes incredibly brittle and flakes apart. And some pages sometimes will fuse together. Anyway, this letter got the attention that it should have from the authorities because it sure as hell reads like somebody is threatening to kill Jesse Smollett. The only problem was it doesn't seem to have been designed to get the Chicago authorities to snap to attention and do their due diligence in investigating this crime and confirming or chest testing and confirming that the substance in the envelope was harmless, that it turned out to be aspirin. This letter appears to have been, apparently, according to reports anyway, out of Chicago, was designed for a much broader audience, a wider audience. He wanted national attention for getting a death threat and for getting an envelope sent to him with a powdered substance inside the envelope. He didn't get it. It wasn't big enough, according to the CBS station out in Chicago. They've done some digging. They've done a lot of research on this. Smollett was apparently not happy with the response to the letter that he'd gotten. And that is what inspired him, according to police sources, and this is the tactic that they're taking, to stage the attack on himself. He was hoping it could just end with this letter. Like, oh my God, what's happening to Jesse Smollett? Let's all pay attention to him. He's got a new record coming out, by the way. Victim, 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 new record. Support the victim by buying his new record. It didn't matter. Nobody cared. That's what happens when you're not really the star of a show. So he had to take it up a notch. So he actually staged the attack, according to police sources, that was depicted in the horrible, god-awful penis-slash-stick-figure drawing in this letter. Looks like it's right out of Mad Magazine. I don't know who thought this was a good idea. I get it. There are crazy people in the world, but they're not 12 years old. That's all I'm saying. If you see the drawing, it's like, okay, yeah, you cut and pasted. Okay, yeah, you're crazy. But you're also a 9-year-old who had access to only a red marker. there's a disconnect there. So there was a rehearsal and there was a money exchange. As I said yesterday, the two Nigerian brothers who claim now that they're actually born and raised in Chicago. They're not actual Nigerian citizens. Who knows? They choreographed this fake attack. Somebody had to hit Jesse in the face because he was swollen a little bit and he had a cut on one of his cheeks. But now that the brothers have been, who were paid allegedly $3,500, they found receipts, according to police, for the rope and a bunch of other evidence. They also took a bunch of stamps. So they're suspecting that maybe these brothers were also involved in the sending of the letter in coordination with Jesse. And so they're now cooperating with police, which means that Jesse Smollett, when police said, "Hey, we would like to interview you again, we come up with some neat new information we'd like to run past you since last we spoke," his lawyers have not yet allowed that to happen. You don't run and hide from the police if you are the true victim of a crime. And if you're not going to change your story that you told them the first time, you just go back into police headquarters and you say, "No, they are lying. Here's what happened. I'll tell it to you again. I'll say it a little more slowly so we can get all the details and I'll answer any question you have." Of course, if you don't really have anything to hide, you're the victim. Remember, that was the story. Well, that is no longer the story, and Smollett has sort of... I love how the media reported it. He's holed up with his lawyers and his publicist. Of course, you got to have the publicist there. That's really what this was all about in the first place, publicity. It just kind of blew up in his face. So now that this is a political issue, yesterday I played Cory Booker, Senator from New Jersey, presidential candidate, of course, Democrat, who had tweeted out upon hearing this immediately, said, "Well, this is a modern-day lynching, and we need to enact my anti-lynching laws." I think we got the anti-lynching thing kind of covered, Corey, but hey, okay, if you want to pass another law doing the same thing, of course, it was all just for publicity. But then Cory Booker, when confronted with the new reality, actually reality, he refused to comment. He said he's going to wait until more evidence comes out, because after all, this country is a horribly racist country, and hate is on the rise. So while maybe this attack might turn out not to be real, there's still hatred, which is very real out there. He gave a very diplomatic, rambling answer and blamed President Trump for all the hate in the world, which is crap. The hate in the world mostly comes from the left. And so after Cory Booker, there was a question. Will somebody else ask Kamala Harris, California Democratic Senator? She also conveniently tweeted out the exact same wording, an attempted modern-day lynching. As soon as this story broke, because the Democratic nomination fight is a fight to be the most woke, and the most woke doesn't sit back and wait for facts and evidence to start presenting itself. That's not the way the woke work. So yesterday, surprisingly, but in a fairly calm and kind of friendly way, because remember, they were just shopping with her the other day and giggling up a storm, somebody got around to asking Kamala Harris about, do you want to change your story about the tweet saying that what happened to Jesse Smollett was a modern-day lynching? And if you haven't seen this video yet, I highly recommend you seek it out online. If you have seen this video, watch it again. You will see her reaction. There's a lot of pauses. There's a lot of sort of Kamala not speaking when she has been asked a question happening here. But what happens immediately upon her being informed of her tweet, she's like, "What tweet? I don't know what you're talking about." She narrows her eyes. She looks to her left. And she's got that look of, well, to my mind, she's looking for the staffer who runs her Twitter account. She does not clearly does not run her Twitter account. You would remember if you tweeted out yourself that this is a high terror, a modern day attempted lynching. I think that would stick out in your memory. She appears to have no memory of this tweet whatsoever, which makes me think that maybe the staffer running her Twitter account didn't run that one past her and didn't inform her after the fact. It was just, oh crap, Cory Booker's weighing in. We better get out there. We better not be the least woke. We're not going to be the most woke, but can't be the least woke. So I like that phrasing of an attempted modern lynching. So let's just go with that and throw it out there. I don't think Kamala Harris really gave this story much thought, because who cares about some random actor most people have never heard of, especially when you're running for president? But you got to appear woke. So when this question is asked to Kamala Harris, envision her eyes going, that son of a bitch, because that's kind of what her eyes do. Like, and then she looks to the left like she's looking for who, what did you tweet in my name about lynchings? What in the hell are you doing? I'm trying to appeal to a bunch of people and you're putting me in this box. That's the kind of look she gets. And then she goes into the lawyerly, well, we need to wait until we find out more evidence, which again, just like Cory Gardner yesterday, would have been a good philosophy to adhere to in the first place. I believe Cory Booker sent his own tweet because he's just that sort of hippy dippy airheady dumb. I don't think Kamala Harris has personally ever logged into Twitter, to be perfectly honest with you. But listen to this exchange and envision what I just told you happening there. And all the silence when the question ends and Kamala Harris isn't really saying anything, her eyes narrow and you son of a, what did you tweet? Listen for it.
Which tweet? What tweet?
Saying that it is a modern day lynching that
sorry.
Yes. Jussie Smollett.
Okay, so I will say this about that case. I think that the facts are still unfolding, and I'm very concerned.
I love it there. She's not given this any thought whatsoever. I have no idea. I don't know. I might have heard about it randomly, but I'll say this about this case. No, you've already technically said quite a bit about this case, Senator. You were pretty unambiguous, at least under your name. And if you're running for president, you should probably be a little bit more aware of what is being put out under your name. Because the next question I would have asked if I were there, of course it wasn't asked because I wasn't there and nobody else there would dare ask a question like this, would be, did you actually send that tweet? Did you call it an attempted modern lynching? Or was this sent out by staff under your name? Because it's abundantly clear by watching this that she has no freaking clue what the hell anybody is talking about. But they just let it go because they're all friends. They're shopping buddies. And that's how journalism works. But I do find it very interesting that she did not have a damn, what? I don't know what you're talking about. What, twit? Tweet? Oh, crap. Where's that SOB who runs my Twitter account? Very, very funny and caught off guard. There's going to be a lot of this. Because if you think Joe Biden tweets, or if you think most of these presidential candidates on the Democratic side actually tweet their own stuff, yeah, I got some oceanfront property in Arizona to sell you, because they are not tweeting their own stuff. Most people who are running for president don't have a clue what Twitter is, other than they keep hearing about it from their staff and they've got to pretend like they know about it. They're not. The president tweets. The president controls his own Twitter account. But the most senators, most members of Congress, I'd say more members of the House than actual senators control their own Twitter accounts. There's just a generational thing there. But I love when they get caught. What? What did I? Who? No. What? Oh, crap. What do I have to try and justify now? That was Kamala Harris's day. She will be missed. But she did do other things yesterday that I thought were kind of funny and worth noting, because she was up in New Hampshire, because she is running for president of the United States. And she had I don't know what planet these liberals live on. I really don't. And I don't know what planet the people who sit and act like a gaggle of barking seals and applaud on command, I don't know what planet they live on either, the people who gather. Who's got time on a Monday to go to a high school gymnasium to hear the senator from California speak because she wants your vote in a Democratic primary 12 months from now? I want that person's life, that you got that much time on your hands. Anyway, at her little town hall, she brought up the subject of education. And it's really kind of instructive what she thinks and what the Democrats think is the role of government and you in this sort of collectivist, it's not even sort of us, this collectivist society they'd like to build.
Let's speak the truth. Let's speak the truth about education. You know, we're a society that pretends to care about education. Not so much the education of other people's children. Let's speak that truth. Let's speak that truth.
You can hear the barking seal chorus up in New Hampshire. The Democrats up there will applaud anything. Let's speak that truth. Let's speak that truth. Yeah, I'll speak that truth, Senator Harris. I don't give a crap about anybody else's kids' education. I'd like them to be educated, but my concern and my focus will be focused towards my children. Whatever happens to somebody else's children is their responsibility. The problem is we far too oftentimes just are being encouraged, mostly by Democrats, to sit back and let government do it. Don't worry about it. I don't want to know about your children being educated, and I don't want to know about my children being educated. None of it is my concern. The government handles that. And if it doesn't go well because little Junior isn't doing their homework, well, that's not my problem. That's government's problem, and government needs to do more. It's the mentality that got us into this mess that we're in right now, where, you know, the world's elite would not want to send their children to any school in the United States of America, especially not a public school. Hell, the elite in this country don't send their kids to public school. You think they're going to subject their kids to a public school education when they can avail themselves of the really good private schools? The public schools are for the peons, the people who are ruled. They'll exercise school choice because they can afford it. And then they'll whine about income inequality. And then they will vote against vouchers, the idea of school choice. They'll kill all of that. But they care deeply about the education of your children, which is just code for we need more of your money so that we can spend it, so that we can control it. It's hypocritical, it's garbage, it's typical liberal pap. But to sit there and say, well, we got a real problem, let's speak this truth. You don't care enough about the education of other kids. I don't want anybody involved in the education of my kids. I am going to make sure, and my wife will make sure, that my children do their homework. We may even homeschool them for a while, depending on where we live and how crappy the schools are. That's how sad our public education system is. But Senator Harris wasn't done speaking truths. I love how she congratulates herself. Let's speak that truth. I'm going to speak that truth. Like nobody ever said this before in our lives. We've never heard any talk. You're so real, Kamala Harris. Can we get you a sash and a ribbon, perhaps? Is there anything we can do for you? Because you're so real. You're out there speaking truths that all just happen to dovetail perfectly with liberal talking points from the last 40 years, during which that education system has completely gone into the toilet. But hey, you know what? You keep speaking your truths, Kamala. But she had more truths to speak.
Let's agree that we have failed to put the resources into our public education system, and instead we are putting tons of money into a system of mass incarceration. Because we are not being smart about investing in the future of our country. Let's speak these truths.
Preach, sister, preach. Of course, you're preaching lies, but hey, what are you going to do? We don't spend enough money on education. Oh, no, we're just cheap and ever because we just want to fill up that and clog up that school-to-prison pipeline. That's what we want to do. We spend more than $12,000 per student in this country on education per year, not just over the course of their K-12 education. There are very few countries in the world. There's a whole bunch of different charts that the countries change, but we're about anywhere from 5 to 10 in a world of 193 countries in spending on education. It's weird how the countries who spend less than us per pupil get better results than we do, but it's all because we're not investing enough. But we are willing to throw money toward mass incarceration. Like there was some big old meeting a few years ago and said, what should we do with all this power we've amassed? I've got it. Let's just throw a whole bunch of people in jail. Huh? Let's build prisons and throw people in prisons. And everybody said, oh yeah, that sounds like a really good plan for growth and for morale. Let's do it. Of course, that's not true at all, and here's a really simple way that I would like to offer to Senator Harris and for anybody, any Democrat running for president, on how we can end mass incarceration, which I thought that the crime bill, the crime reform bill, the justice reform bill, or whatever the hell it was called, that was just signed into law was supposed to handle that. It's getting a lot of people out of prison early and getting rid of mandatory minimums and things like that. I thought this was going to solve this problem, but apparently not, because nothing ever solves problems. Government always begets more government. But here's a little bit of advice on if you want to end mass incarceration, Senator. I thoroughly implore you to avail yourself of this idea. And you can steal it, you can say it's your own. If you want to end mass incarceration, encourage people to stop breaking the law. You know? They're problem solved, okay? How about that? Mass incarceration isn't just a whole bunch of people who were jaywalking one day and the cops really got a bug up their ass and decided to throw everybody in the clink. People are in prison for a reason. We haven't really added all that much to our criminal code in the last 20 years. Yes, minor things. Most of those things, through regulation, usually end up with fines. But as far as the things that can get your ass thrown into prison, as Senator Harris seems to think there are just many of them, those have been around for a long time, and they're pretty basic rules that you can adhere to, the average American can adhere to, and avoid prison 99.9% of the time. Let's just call it 100% of the time, with a rounding error in the other direction. They are as follows. Don't steal anything. Don't kill anybody. Don't hit anybody. Don't scam anybody. They all involve not robbing or ripping off people. Taking something that isn't yours or hurting somebody else. You live by those sort of basic rules, and you're likely not going to end up in prison. It's pretty simple. You don't need a massive government expansion of any program whatsoever. In fact, you could contract a lot of programs if you just encouraged people to follow the rules. Now, yes, there are certain laws that are incredibly stupid and need to be changed. Not the concept of prisons, because the concept of prisons actually serves a pretty good purpose. There are some really awful, violent, evil human beings amongst the human beings who dwell on this earth at any given time. You want to be able to contain them. Dare I say, you might want to be able to execute them if they do certain things that we deem to be unacceptable, but no Democrat would ever have that. But we need to be able to put them away, so therefore the prison system is necessary. I wouldn't even say it's a necessary evil, because it's necessary to contain evil. But if you think that there are certain things that are ensnaring too many people, then feel free, because I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Senator, but I believe you have a job that would allow you to introduce, legislation to change existing law. Now, most of the things that people are in prison for aren't on a federal level. They are state crimes and local crimes, mostly state crimes. The federal government has no real jurisdiction over that. I don't know if you know this or not, but murdering somebody isn't a federal offense, unless it's a federal government employee or happens in a federal property. It's a state law. That's why some states have the death penalty for murder. Other states have life in prison. Other states, like Maryland, have a, well, you'll spend a couple of years in prison and then you'll get out soon, as long as you swear you won't do it again. All over the country, they're all different. The federal government weighing in on that has no bearing on those things whatsoever, because the federal government has no sway over state law on those sorts of things. So if you really want to end mass incarceration, the easiest and least expensive way, both from a monetary standpoint and from a societal standpoint, to do that would be to encourage people to not break the law, not change the law. There are a lot of murders happen in this country every year. So do you say, well, we haven't been able to stop these murders? Now we're just incarcerating en masse a whole bunch of murderers. We're not really getting to the root of the problem. The war on murder has failed. Therefore, why don't we just repeal the state laws on murder? Let's just get that out of the way. Well, that would be incredibly stupid, yet that's exactly what they're doing with drugs. On one hand, they're saying we have an opioid epidemic that we must address. And on the other hand, they're saying we are locking up far too many people for minor drug offenses. Now, minor drug offenses are not, you know, some guy walking down the street with a roach clip in his pocket and he forgot about it because he was so baked going to see a movie. It is serious drug dealers, sometimes distributors, who are caught many times with weapons, all sorts of other problems, or robbing a liquor store or whatever, and then they're plea bargained down to, yeah, you know what, we're not going to charge him with a liquor store robbery, we'll throw out the gun charge. If he pleads to possession with intent to distribute, or even just simple possession of some fentanyl, some heroin, and we'll give him 3 years. Right, will you do that? All right, we'll plead guilty to that because the guy's guilty of the robbing of the liquor store and the having of the illegal gun and all that. But, well, those things would have put him away for the rest of his life. If he just pleads to the drug charge, he could be out in 3 to 5 years. Why? Who wouldn't take that deal if you're guilty of those things? But on paper, in statistic world, in Democratic circles, they don't tell you about that. Instead, they say this person is in prison for a nonviolent drug offense. Forget all the drop charges, the thrown out charges, the plea deal. And then they can sit there and say, well, the school to prison pipeline strikes again. This country is horrible. We have a mass incarceration problem. No, we have a mass committing of crime problem in this country, you Democrats. And it's mostly in Democrat areas. That is not by accident. Why do I say that? Because you Democrats have spent 2 to 3 generations now telling people who live in your districts, who you are supposed to represent, that they can't get ahead, that they're screwed, that the system is rigged, that everything is stacked against them, that the system, the country itself, the very country itself, is steeped in and founded on racism. And don't bother trying. You'll never get ahead because the system will keep you down. White privilege works against you and you're never going to get ahead. Well, what do you think happens there? Well, screw it. I'm never going to get ahead. I can't get ahead. I'm not going to. My education sucks, thanks to Democrats. They're spending a fortune, but I'm not learning anything. Why wouldn't I go stand on a corner and make $500 a day or $500 a week? That's a hell of a lot of money. Why wouldn't you do it? So if there's anybody feeding this mythical school-to-prison pipeline, you might want to find a reflective surface, Senator. And again, if you want to stop mass incarceration, maybe stop inspiring victimhood and start inspiring aspiration. Again, remember aspiring? Remember being inspired to do things? What did you want to be when you grow up? Whatever it was, nobody said, well, forget it, the system. You're never going to be. You in NASA, please, there's no way in hell you'd ever make it in NASA. You couldn't. You got one eye that's half closed. No way. No. But if you tell somebody that enough, they're never going to make it. They're going to start to believe you, especially if that person telling them that is in a position of authority, supposedly a respectable position of power, a leader. The leader tells you, you can't do it. Don't bother trying. The system is rigged against you. You might as well just take your ball and go home and forget it, kid. You're going to start to believe that. And then you're going to start to say, well, I can make easy money if I just drive this trunk full of heroin from Baltimore to Philadelphia. Why wouldn't I do that? That's going to pay me 3 months' worth of living expenses, and it's a two-hour drive. So when they sit there and they whine about this mass incarceration stuff, you have to really think about it logically. It wasn't a big meeting of evil white guys lighting cigars with $100 bills going, what can we do to get as many non-white people thrown in prison today as humanly possible? No, it is the end result. I will give them that it's a perhaps even a byproduct, but it is an end result of democratic political strategy and policy for generations that was designed mostly to empower Democrats. So it worked on that front. But in the wake of it, there are millions of destroyed lives and lives that never really got going because the so-called political leaders told them, forget it, kid. You couldn't possibly make it. Don't try. You're only going to be disappointed. So, Senator Harris, let's speak these truths. While you're out there speaking all these so-called truths, let's get real. Do you have the guts to do it? I don't think you do. I really don't think you do. In other Democratic news, remember Ilhan Omar, the anti-Semitic Somali refugee, now member of Congress, Democrat in good standing, who hates herself some Jews? It's a hell of a long title. Her business card is really huge. She was praised over the weekend by none other than Louis Farrakhan at the Nation of Islam's Savior's Day conference at the United Center in Chicago. It draws thousands of people. And usually, I don't know if she was there this time, Tamika Mallory, who was one of the co-founders of the Women's March. Lovely, lovely people, these Democrats. I want to play two clips of audio of Louis Farrakhan. And it's kind of three clips of audio of Louis Farrakhan. It's telling about the media. And then we'll get into Laura Logan talking about the media. Every time David Duke, that piece of human garbage, that waste of human flesh, tweeted during the 2016 campaign, the Democratic media beat a path. It was a puff of smoke. It was like the Roadrunner. Just he was there and then poof, there's just a puff of smoke and a trail. They beat a path to Donald Trump and said, well, what do you say about what David Duke said? David Duke tweeted something nice about you. Isn't that proof that you, sir, are a racist? Donald Trump could have said, I really like to eat Raisin Bran. It keeps me regular. And David Duke tweets, you know what? Raisin Bran keeps me regular, too. And the story would have been racists eat Raisin Bran. David Duke praises Donald Trump over keeping himself regular. You could just see that coming. I want to give you an example of how the media works in just a headline form. Chadwick Moore, screen captured these two headlines, one from the Jussie Smollett case, the other from the Justin Fairfax, the lieutenant governor's case. See if you can spot the difference in how this stuff works and see if you can see any bias in just these two tweets, both from the New York Times. On Jussie Smollett, quote, Jussie Smollett, one of the stars of the TV show Empire, was attacked in Chicago by two men who yelled racial and homophobic slurs and wrapped a rope around his neck, according to police. Now here's Justin Fairfax, Democratic Lieutenant Governor of the state of Virginia, from the New York Times tweet, quote, Justin Fairfax, a Democrat who has drawn national attention as Virginia Governor Ralph Northam considers resigning over past racist behavior, issued a statement denying an unsubstantiated allegation of sexual assault. Do you see? The Smollett case was presented as gospel truth, whereas the allegations against Fairfax were unsubstantiated allegations of sexual assault. So you see how the media works there. David Duke has a solid bowel movement, and Donald Trump is asked to answer for it. Do you really think he shouldn't have been having some sort of fiber in his diet? Make that stool looser, Mr. President. Will you denounce David Duke's solid bowel movement, Mr. President? Nobody's asked about Louis Farrakhan on the left. Nobody's asked, will you denounce Louis Farrakhan? It's not even reported on it. This will likely be the first time you hear this audio from Savior's Day in Chicago, because the mainstream media, even though thousands of people gathered to hear Louis Farrakhan, and one of the attendees for the past more than a decade, I believe, I think she said it was 18 years, was Tamika Mallory, one of the leaders and co-founders of the Women's March, who was presented as this great progressive champion leader and was showered with awards by mainstream media outlets for being a woman making a difference. Do you see the disconnect? Do you see the difference? Let's listen to Louis Farrakhan talk about Ilhan Omar, the anti-Semitic congresswoman. I believe I cut some of the clapping out of this just because, for time's sake, but everything else he said, and he said it in order. How many reporters from the Washington Post do you suspect will be dispatched to wherever in the world Ilhan Omar is and asked her about renouncing and denouncing Louis Farrakhan and the words that he said about her? I would say less than zero. But here's Uncle Louis singing the praises of an elected Democrat.
But this Omar from Somalia, she started talking about the Benjamins, and they trying to make her apologize. I, sweetheart, don't do that. Oh, pardon me for calling you sweetheart, but you do have a sweetheart. Because you sure using it to shake the government up. But you have nothing to apologize for. Israel and AIPAC pays off senators and congressmen to do their bidding. So you're not lying. So if you're not lying, stop laying down. You were sent by the people to shake up that corrupt house. Shake it up.
Louis Farrakhan, one of the biggest hate mongers of all time, singing the praises of Ilhan Omar because she said them Jews is buying Congress. And Louis Farrakhan say, don't apologize. You're telling the truth. And Ilhan, in fairness to Omar, she didn't really apologize. She sort of qualified her apology and then said, yeah, but the Jews still, and was right back at it the next day. So she didn't miss a step. She just had to put out a statement because it was reaching critical mass. And then there was a possibility that mainstream media was going to pick up on her rabid anti-Semitism. She's got to pump the brakes. It's kind of hard to pump the brakes when you got Louis Farrakhan praising you. good job, you're pointing out them Jews. Good Lord. Nobody will ask her about it. She won't be asked to renounce it, will she? Have you heard that audio anywhere? Now, if that were a racist white guy saying anything about Donald Trump, why, this is what Donald Trump inspires. And some reporter would probably then say, and this sort of attitude is what caused the attack on Jussie Smollett. Poor, sweet, nourishing Jussie Smollett. Double standards, anybody? Now, in addition to singing the praises of the rabidly anti-Semitic Ilhan Omar in the House of Representatives, the Savior's Day speech from Louis Farrakhan went on to praise the Women's March. Remember, the Women's March was having some difficulties there because of all the rabid anti-Semitism that was being expired. Oh, they weathered it. They made it through, and the media quickly dropped the story completely. Nobody's demanding answers from Tamika Mallory anymore. Linda Sarsour might as well not exist. The media is just pretending that all that stuff about exposing all their anti-Semitism, it didn't happen anymore. And then Louis Farrakhan goes and praises them, and all the Democrats who marched arms with them and sang their praises.
The most beautiful sight that I could lay eyes on when I saw the day after Trump was elected, women from all over the world were standing in solidarity. And a black woman is the initiator of it. Your time now, black woman. You not no little woman. You the second self of God. Now you gotta know that you are a part of God.
Just reverse it in your head. David Duke singing the praises of any Republican. David Duke has been renounced and denounced for going on 30 years by the entirety of the Republican Party. But yet everything he says is now, you know, Republicans must end. You denounce David Duke. I just denounced him for a thing yesterday. Yes, but today he said something else. Will you denounce that as well? Louis Farrakhan is praising progressive leaders of the Democratic Party. And nobody says boo about it. Nobody's made to answer for it. Remember, Tamika Mallory went on The View and refused to renounce Louis Farrakhan. I don't agree with everything he says. Do you disagree with the Jew-hating, Jew-bloodsucker stuff? I don't agree with everything he says, and that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to get into specifics. You can't say you don't agree with his Jews are bloodsuckers comment. Look, anything could be there. Now, after Louis Farrakhan sang the praises of the Women's March and sang the praises of Ilhan Omar, he then went back to being Louis Farrakhan, as if the media, we couldn't possibly ask these people about these comments. They're fairly innocuous, taken on their own, although they're not, but they're fairly innocuous in their heads. They don't hear hatred when it comes from the left. They hear somebody speaking the truth. So Farrakhan decides to slip back into being full-blown Farrakhan. In case there was any ambiguity, immediately after singing the praises of the Women's March leaders and the Democrats and everybody who participated in that, he went on to say this.
Now the wicked Jews want to use me to break up the women's movement. It ain't about Farrakhan. It's about women all over the world have the power to change the world.
Nobody will ask any of them about it. It'll just move on because they all agree. Or they're too busy chasing the real attackers down for Jussie Smollett, or they're actually too busy combing through their old tweets to remove and delete and hope nobody notices that they delete tweets that they sent out about Jussie Smollett. It's a sickness, this media bias, these double standards, and it is going to lead to massive, massive problems, even bigger than we have now. Don't take my word for it about media bias. I make the case here just about every day. But Laura Logan, she sat down for an incredibly long podcast interview. It's like more than 2 hours long. I don't know what you talk to anybody for more than 2 hours for straight. Interview them. But I see this, she's billed everywhere as a 60 Minutes correspondent or CBS News employee. I got to be honest, I didn't think she was anymore because I haven't seen her on there in forever. So I looked it up and I could find no proof that she was still actually employed by CBS or 60 Minutes. She's not listed on the CBS News website under their personalities or whatever. So she's at least, I'll just say, former 60 Minutes employee Laura Logan talking about media bias in this country.
And the media everywhere is mostly liberal, not just in the U.S. But in this country, 85% of journalists are registered Democrats. So that's just a fact, right? No one's registering Democrat when they're rarely a Republican. So the facts are on the side of what you just stated. Most journalists are left or liberal or Democrat or whatever word you want to give it.
Of course, we all knew this, but it's nice to hear somebody who was on the inside admit it. But Laura Logan wasn't done. If Laura Logan was still an employee of CBS, after this, she likely wouldn't be an employee of CBS. They can't have somebody out there telling the truth.
How do you know you're being lied to? How do you know you're being manipulated? How do you know there's something not right with the coverage? When they simplify it all, and there's no gray. There's no gray. Mm. It's all one way. Well, life isn't like that. If it doesn't match real life, it's probably not, something's wrong, right? So, for example, you know, all the coverage on Trump all the time is negative. There's nothing, no mitigating policy or event or anything that has happened since he was elected that is out there in the medias that you can read about, right? Well, that tells you that's distortion of the way things go in real life. Because although the media has always been, historically, always been left-leaning, we've abandoned our pretense, or at least the effort, to be objective today.
It's absolutely true. She is telling the absolute truth, which is why I said that if she's not, if she is still a CBS News employee, she's not going to be a CBS News employee for very much longer. She will not be invited on Morning Joe anytime soon. She won't be talking with Chris Cuomo anywhere or Don Lemon anywhere ever. She's letting the cat out of the bag. It's a problem for the leftists because they are in denial. They're not really in denial. They're not sitting there going, well, you know, I think that we're doing a perfectly fair and honest job. They know what they're doing. They're counting on their audience not knowing. That is why MSNBC and CNN play so many clips of Fox News. They don't want people to get curious and only hear about Fox News. They watch Fox News not so you don't have to, so their audience doesn't have to. They watch Fox News so their audience won't. They demonize Fox News so their audience won't. That's why they lie about Fox News so constantly. They're terrified that people in their audience, not the true believers, the zombies who will go, it doesn't matter what whatever Rachel Maddow says is the word of God, not them, but the people who maybe don't pay attention to the news and they just want to see, oh, there's some big event happening, so I'm going to flip on MSNBC and find out what the story is, or I'm going to see what CNN is covering today because I've got some time and there's nothing else on and I don't have anything DVR'd. Not, those are the people they want to discourage from ever flipping over to Fox News. Because once you do that, you go, wait a second, there's more to that story? There's another side to that story? What I've been told is only part of it? You think you've spent your whole life looking at this beautiful painting, and it turns out you've only got the corner of a mural, and that's it? Everybody, somebody else has been obscuring the rest of it? That is Goebbels-esque what goes on over on those networks. Don't, again, here's Laura Logan, award-winning journalist, making the case. I don't have to do it.
The former executive editor of the New York Times has a book coming out, Jill Abramson, and she says we would do, I don't know, dozens of stories about Trump every single day, and every single one of them was negative. She said we have become the anti-Trump paper of record. Well, that's not our job. That's a political position. That means we've become political activists, in a sense, and some could argue propagandists, mm-hmm. right? And there's some merit to that.
There's a lot of merit to that. It's actually very interesting to hear somebody who was such a major part of the mainstream media, who's now kind of backed off, apparently, from it for a while, and recognize this. And look back on, you know, if you've played for a team, a professional sports team, or you're a fan of a professional sports team or whatever, and you're gone, you're traded or whatever, you don't really wish them ill. And you see them deteriorate, and you go, well, you know, they're trading away their young talent. They're doing what? You might even say that, not because you want to rub their faces in it, but because you still have a place inside your heart for that organization. You wish them well. You wish good things. You see your school going to hell, and you go, you know, there were great teachers there. I don't know what happened, but they really need to stop this hemorrhaging, this horrible situation. You don't go, well, I graduated. I don't care if the wheels came off afterwards. Screw everybody who follows me. Let them choke in my wake. No. She's looking at journalism now, and she's seeing something she clearly loves. She said she's 47 years old, and she's been in journalism since she was 17. So she clearly has an affinity for it. And she's watching it be destroyed, not from without, but from within. And she's lamenting that. She's sending up warning flares. They won't be listened to. But it's nice to know that somebody out there, you know, kind of like, finally, somebody else gets it. Somebody from the inside. You would think somebody from the inside would cause other people still on the inside to go, maybe she's making a point. But no, they'll just circle the wagons. They'll still get Pulitzer Prizes and all sorts of other grants that come with a few $1,000 checks, and they'll be able to put in their Twitter bios, I'm a such and such award-winning journalist, and therefore I'm super important, and nobody else, everybody who says that I'm a biased hack is wrong. Brian Stelter will get some kind of award, and he says, see, this is vindication for me, rather than confirmation bias. Sadly, that's what journalism really has become these days. All right, finally today, I saw this story and I thought, I gotta play this audio. I could read the story, but it wouldn't do it justice. Plus, the more I talk, the more plugged my nose gets, so it might even not sound like me at this point. But they're really just annoying, awful human beings on the planet. There's, you know, there's Hitler awful, and then there's your annoying neighbor who never cuts their grass awful. This person falls somewhere in the middle. I think more towards the Hitler side, but that's just the carnivore in me. Listen to this description of this wedding and this bride. I know the show Bridezilla exists. This one takes the cake and is probably the worst person on earth, at least right now.
Now to the bride-to-be, who has a lot of people talking about who she is and isn't inviting to her upcoming wedding. This after the internet got wind of her very stern dietary restrictions. Not only does the woman want her guests to eat vegan on her wedding day, she wants them to give up animal products forever. Anyone who refused was promptly uninvited, including her mom and two cousins who were bridesmaids. Well, this might have stayed a private matter, but the bride posted something in a Facebook group called Vegan Revolution, asking for advice about her omnivore family guilt-tripping her into hosting what she calls murderers, those being the meat eaters. As for reasoning, the bride, who is 20, says, even though her loved ones were originally invited and agreed to a vegan menu, she couldn't go forward knowing that they would go back to eating meat the next day. She also claims many in her family are anti-vegan and would attack her vegan friends at the wedding. At least one of those family members has responded, saying they have been nothing but supportive and are hurt by the bride's decision.
They don't give this chick's name, but they did give screen captures of what she'd posted online on the group Vegan Revolution. I don't know. They're all going to suffer from, like, anemia or something. She wrote, quote, when family tries to guilt trip you into letting them come to your fully vegan wedding, even though they are omnivores. And then there are two laughing until you cry emojis. Two of them, because one just wouldn't be enough. Just for some context, some family members were told they are not invited to my wedding because we do not want to host murderers at our wedding, which is supposed to be one of the happiest days of our lives. I wonder how she votes. How would you, if you're betting $5 in Vegas and how this woman votes, what would you put that on? She said, "This is about my wedding. My partner and I won't feel comfortable having omnivores there, as we know they will just go back to eating meat the same day, if not the next day, and with how many people on my side of the family are anti-vegan, it's going to be a lot less of a worry for me, especially because I won't have to fret about keeping my family in line around my vegan friends. If they're willing to attack me for it as a family, imagine what they'll do to complete strangers." Hey, man, I saw you eating that salad. Step outside, man. Let's go. One of the family members responded, and they've also posted that on their video. Quote, "Are you joking? The only reason she suddenly hates us is because we refuse to be vegan. Literally no one has attacked her for being vegan. No one. Bullied? I don't think so. We are the ones that stood up to the bullies. Yeah, we've had some fights, but what family doesn't? I've literally never attacked her for being vegan. Never. If she thinks we are toxic and bad people just because we don't eat meat, then okay, you think that too." I think that nobody in this family knows how to construct a coherent sentence. Perhaps one side's eating too much meat and the other side's not eating any meat, but it sounds like a hell of a wedding. I'm not sure who would want to go to this anyway, but on a plus side, you don't have to buy a gift, so screw this lady. She's awful. Kind of. This is a very woke 20-year-old getting married, but it's her first marriage, and I suppose it's good that she get it out of the way while she's young, because I suspect she's going to have a lot of them in the future. All right, as I said at the beginning of the show, I watch too much news, and I'm trying to watch less news, just because what goes on cable news isn't news anymore. It's really just terrible crap. It's people disconnected from the. They don't have newsmakers on anymore. They have their paid contributors come on and spew their opinions, and all they know is what anybody would know who's read an Associated Press story about it. So I just turn it off. When I see contributors come on, I grab the remote and I put on anything. Well, most of my shows, well, they're either being canceled by Netflix. Netflix sucks. They're canceling all the Marvel shows like Daredevil and Punisher and Jessica Jones. Great shows. Luke Cage. Even Iron Fist, which wasn't great, but it's good enough. I just like the universe. They're canceling those. My other shows, my guilty pleasures, are Love After Lockup, which is just the worst slice of humanity you could ever imagine. I highly recommend it on a Friday night. If you ever want to feel good about your life, no matter what state your life is in, watch Love After Lockup. And a show called Below Deck and Below Deck Mediterranean. Below Deck just ended. Chris Plant, my friend Chris Plant, turned me on to Below Deck one day over dinner. He's like, "Oh, just watch this show." And I came home and I binged watched it that weekend, and I've been hooked ever since, a couple years ago now. But Below Deck just ended, and Below Deck Mediterranean doesn't start for a little while. So I'm in a rut. I don't have any sort of show to distract me. I'm not going to watch CBS. I just want to say that off the start. CBS is the network my parents always watched. I'm just not going to watch CBS. It's bad television, horribly cheesy dramas, and bad sitcoms. But is there a reality show out there that you could recommend, or something off the wall? It can be trashy. I don't expect, you know, Emmy-winning performances or anything like that. Or if there's some show on Netflix or Amazon, those are the two things that I have, that you recommend. Something. I need something to sort of get me by until Below Deck Mediterranean comes on, and something to abide me when Love After Lockup ends, which I fear will be soon, because I think everybody's going to end up back in prison in that show. I don't know where it's going to end, but I don't think it's going to end well. So if you got a good show that, and don't give me the Breaking Bads and the Wires. I've watched all of them. I'm talking about something current. Email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. And I'll try and check it out. So I'm desperately, like Saturday afternoons when I'm cleaning or playing with the kid or whatever, I just like to have something on the TV that I can kind of pay attention to and kind of ignore. And I need that. So if it's, like, I tried to get into that Million Dollar Listing show. That doesn't really do it for me. It's not nearly as exciting. So I'm looking. So if you got something that's just kind of trashy enough, I love House Hunters International, Flea Market Flip, garbage like that I already get. Is there a hidden gem out there? That's what I'm looking for. Derek@dailycaller.com. Anyway, thank you for listening. Have a great Tuesday, or as good a Tuesday as anybody can have. And if you're in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area, we're supposed to get some snow tonight and tomorrow, which will mean everything will be closed and there will be a panic. So buy canned goods and bottled water, because everybody panics here, and school is probably already canceled. Have a great day. We'll see you again tomorrow.
Now the wicked Jews want to use me to break up the woman's movement.